This is the Senate Ag and Vets Budget and Policy Division. Actually, we're doing policy, I believe, this afternoon. It's 7 minutes after 3 on Tuesday, April 7th. Members, we're going to start with Senate File 2047. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it's a pleasure to be in the Ag Committee. This is the first time in a long time that I've come to this committee, and it's an honor to be here.
Nice to have you here.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that there are two amendments to the bill. I have an amendment, the A09-0377 amendment. I would like to have that put on as an author's amendment.
I'm counting heads. And we don't have a quorum yet,
so I'll set that aside.
And Thank you.
So why don't I, and I believe there's another amendment. I could talk about all of the two amendments and the underlying bill if you would like.
We're waiting for counsel who's holding those amendments, but if you would like to start to explain your first one, that would be fine, Senator.
Mr. Chair, members, the Senate File 2047 is a very small bill to appropriate $25,000 from the general fund in fiscal year 2010 to the Commission of Ag for a grant to the St. Paul Growers Association. And the reason for that is because in July of 2008, specifically July 10th of 2008, a pretty big and terrible hailstorm came through. And the hardest hit area in this area was through the DeKalb area in around Dakota County. The majority of the land that was damaged really dramatically affected a number of the small-time growers who are part of the farmers market in the city of St. Paul and the St. Paul Growers Association. Many of these growers are what we called weekend warriors who work a full-time job, but many of them do gardening. I don't know, my mom calls 4 acres a garden. For agricultural people, I think 4 acres is a garden, but they do weekend gardening. Some families do it as a full-time, as a family effort. But many of these growers were very badly affected by the damages that had incurred. The event was not declared a disaster, and obviously, no one could tap into the traditional federal state agricultural relief. And so in consultation with the chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Vickerman said that there might be an opportunity for us to give them a little bit of relief. So it will reimburse them up to $1,000 of membership fees. And in consultation with the executive director of the St. Paul Growers Association, he said that what would be more helpful is that the membership fee that I was contemplating isn't just a membership due, but it is actually a membership due plus the retail leases of the stalls for the year for the sale of the farmers market.
So that's Senator Moore, we have the A1 in the room now. We also have quorum, so let's hand it out and get that one passed, and then we'll take that one up first. Senator Hand, did you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Erickson-Rolfe.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moore, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Erickson-Rolfe offers the A1 amendment.
And then, actually, I have a small verbal amendment to add to it.
Would you like to incorporate into this?
If I could, sir.
Why don't we try it and see if it works?
Okay. You'll see on number 8 there, it says, work cooperatively with local governments and others to strengthen the connection between farmers that practice sustainable farming methods and urban, then put comma, rural, and consumer and suburban consumers, including but not limited to promoting local farmers markets and community-supported agriculture.
All right.
So in talking with Senator Torres Ray about this amendment, I said, well, you got urban and suburban consumers of the farmers markets. Us rural folks, we would like the same thing. We have farmers markets in rural communities, and I think they would enjoy the benefits of this amendment as well, to be able to work cooperatively with their local governments. So this essentially covers all consumers.
Members, we have the A1 amendment, and included in that is a oral amendment that is being incorporated on line 23 of page 1, after urban, add comma, rural.
Comma.
You don't need a comma with an and.
Well, yeah, you do, we do a statute.
Yep.
So we will go comma, rural, comma, yeah. And suburban consumers, et cetera. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, I believe that I was saying that the bill asked for reimbursement of membership fees. The 809-0377 amendment also adds and retail leases to it, and I wonder if the committee would be willing to entertain that amendment.
Do we have a second amendment, Mr. Knopf?
I don't.
Okay, we don't.
I'll move that orally.
Senator Chaudhry moves the orally the amendment. We'll need some language.
Mr. Chair, on line 1.8, after the word fees, you would insert and retail leases.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
I guess I'd like to get some advice from counsel. I'm a little troubled, I guess, by the bill that is requiring that the public pay or reimburse fees and membership dues to a private organization. Is this commonly done in law, that we appropriate money to be used to pay for dues for private membership and organizations?
Sure. Mr. Knopf, do you want to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it is done in other areas. In fact, the Senator Erickson-Ropes bill from 2 years ago, actually we've been doing this for a while now, where we help and pay farmers for getting into organic farming to get certified. And then the certification agency is a private entity, and the state actually pays a portion of the fee for the certification of the organic grower. So I think that this wouldn't be really any different than that.
Other questions? The second oral amendment before us is on line 8 of page 1. And it incorporates and retail leases, I believe, is the language we added there. Other questions? Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
And
any
Mr.
other do we have some testimony that we need to take? Or?
No, Mr. Chair, with due respect to the tight schedule that you have, just for the record, I just want to state that the Executive Director for the Growers Association is here to support the bill, but we don't have to submit any testimony.
Well, Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think when somebody comes in here to testify, if we got a minute or two, we should let them testify.
State your name for the record, please. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Jack Girton. I'm the director of the St. Paul Growers Association.
Mr. Girton, tell us a little bit about your association.
Well, our association consists of 135 family farmers throughout the Twin Cities. The vegetable growers all come within a 50-mile radius of the Twin Cities. And we currently have 23 markets a week going on in the Twin Cities that these 135 farmers participate in. We do farmers markets to the south of Lakeville and over to the north, Woodbury, and Savage to the outside perimeters of the Twin Cities. All our growers come from family farms between 4 acres and 20 acres. And we've been doing the farmers markets now since early 1800s. And so sort of the last 150 some odd years, we've been participating in the farmers markets throughout the Twin Cities. The St. Paul Farmers Market has 1 million customers coming to all our markets per year. They're very reliant on our locally grown produce. We do not do any brokering at our license at our farmers market. It's all locally grown, raised, and sold by the producer. So the growers not only raise it, but they do have to go through the extensive work of retailing it as well. And that's where our organization comes in, to assist the growers in retailing their product.
Mr. Girton, is there a quality control, or is that kind of left up to the consumer?
No, it's I, as a director, am the quality control at the market. The growers are a voting membership, So they're the ones that hired me to actually do the quality control at the market. And we do not get involved with pricing. The customer is the ultimate judge of that. We strictly just oversee the quality of product coming into the market.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Irwin, what are the membership fees? What is the amount of fees, and what are the fees used for?
Well, we have a membership fee of $225 for a membership fee. We have leases that the growers have to pay at least their selling area per year, which comes to $35 per day at our downtown markets, and then $15 a day at all our surrounding markets. And between the membership fee and the lease downtown, we'll run close to $1,000 per year just to go to the downtown market and to pay a membership fee.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Gurdon, are there any growers that do not belong to your association who are not members that sell into the market?
No, only members can sell at the markets we have available. That rule is in effect so that we can field inspect all the product that's coming into the market.
Senator Dale.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gurdon, how many of your members lost money last year because of a hailstorm on July 10, 2008?
Gurdon?
We estimate we had 50 growers that were in the Dakota County area that were around the Rosemount area and south that lost money last year because of the hail storm. The cost for our farmers actually to produce their seed and to fertilize and rent the ground can be in excess of $2,500 per acre with the retail fees on top of that. So a lot of our members are carrying debt from last year because of these the hail storm.
Follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gurdon, do you have an estimate of how much money was lost because of the hailstorm?
Because of the hailstorm, we've never calculated a total dollar loss because our membership doesn't give me the privilege of knowing what the growers do in sales.
Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair and members, if you will recall, this is just the amount of loss for just this one storm on July 10th was insurmountable. But last summer was a very, very active summer from a weather standpoint, and there were a number of other weather-related hailstorms, tornadoes that came through the Twin Cities area or in around the metro area where a lot of farmers market growers were affected. So overall, I mean, this one storm caused right before the biggest weekend, I think, even though the farmers market opened quite early, I believe that this coming weekend was going to be the biggest weekend, the opening weekend for the market. And just that one weekend alone, I think all the growers, the flower growers, the vegetable growers, probably in that single weekend, probably lost at least $1,000 to $1,500 in produce that they were not able to harvest for that weekend's market. Farmers Legal Action Group has been working with a group of these farmers to get them, the larger growers who do this as part of their family's business, getting them registered, getting them crop insurance so that the ones who are doing this as part of their family income are now, you know, have registered the acreage and are going through that process. But for the small growers who do this on the weekends or who are the smaller growers who they don't have enough. This is for them an opportunity to do some gardening work and being able to sell at the market on weekends, maybe every other weekend. They suffered a lot of losses that one weekend. And so if the concern is somehow, you know, up to $1,000 is going to be some kind of windfall on them, it won't even give them back what they lost in that first weekend. And the reason why we said reimbursable is because many of these growers have already probably paid for not only their membership due, but have already remitted payment on the leases. And what we're hoping is that if we could at least get some reimbursement back to them, that they may not be able to recoup all their losses, but they could use this money towards other things like seed purchases or fertilizer or whatever it is that will help them. And so it's a pretty small amount, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gurdon, I know that the producers themselves set prices, but in your conversations with them, what's a hardworking producer typically going to make in a summer? I mean, do they bring in thousands of dollars?
Absolutely. Just to cover their total expenses, they have to bring in at least $4,000 per acre. Just to make a couple $1,000s, they have to invest double that amount just to be fortunate enough. Everything goes perfect to get a couple $1,000s. No, I'd like to let you know that the vegetable growers are in a different situation. They're a part of the family structure. It's 50% of their income. Like all people today, it takes two parties to produce a livelihood, and that's where vegetable growers are, too. The growers, this hailstorm is just like people are experiencing today, getting a pink slip from their jobs. But there is no safety net of unemployment. There is nothing but debt there and another year's hope that they can regain some of their losses.
So Senator Hahn, and then we'll go to our other witness.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Girton, I'm just wondering, why wouldn't, instead of appropriating the public money to pay the association fees, why doesn't the association just not charge the fees for this coming year and let people reimburse themselves by not having to pay the additional fee? Why can't the association just say, well, we'll just won't do the charges this year and let people come and we'll just do business and not charge the fee, and the year after that we'll all be back to you?
Mr. Girton?
Well, we're a nonprofit. We spend 100% of the money that we get in on advertising, insurances, and leasing, and management in the market. We don't have any assets to every dollar we get in, we put into use of promoting and to acquiring an opportunity for growers to sell their products. So indirectly, all that money does go back to them. If we cut the amount of money back and the fees back, it means there's less advertising and less potential business the following year.
Ms. Stokes, welcome to the committee.
It's okay. Thank you, Chairman Vickerman. My name is Susan Stokes. I'm the Executive Director of Farmers Legal Action Group. Pleased to be here today. I would just, if I may, take a minute to say, echo what's already been said, which is the damages suffered by the farmers who sell at the farmers market were substantial. We have on our staff a Hmong farmer outreach coordinator who went out and visited 23 of the farms that were hit by the storm, and she conducted an analysis. Granted, it's not a scientific sampling, and we didn't hit everybody, but we talked to 23 farmers who sell at the farmers market and collected some information from them. And they all sustained, of the 23 we talked to, 15 of them had to retill their land because when the storm came through, it washed off all of the topsoil. They had to retill, replant. Some, it was too late in the season. The flower growers were particularly hard hit. They couldn't replant. Some things could be replanted, but many others couldn't. Tomatoes, it was too late. So our average that we looked at, the average loss for the season that they estimated was, I don't have my glasses on in front of me,
in the omnibus,
was almost $6,000. I'm sorry, it was $14,000. And they carried debt over to the season that they still owed the seed, they still owed the seed companies, or they still owed their landlords. So most of them borrowed from family members, and they still owe that debt. So we also did an analysis of how much they pay in farmers market fees and rental spaces, and a lot of these farmers are trying to sell at as many markets as they can to make ends meet. And the average amount paid for fees, stall fees and fees and membership costs was $4,600. So $1,000 for these people would actually go a really long way and would help them where they were hit the hardest, where the, you know, these are out-of-pocket costs that they lost.
Questions for Ms. Stokes? If not, Senator Erickson-Ropes will move that Senate File 2047 be recommended for inclusion in the omnibus
bill. As amended.
As amended. Other questions to that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator. Members, if you'll take up Senate File 1779, this is the omnibus ag and vets bill. You don't have it in your packet, so don't take it up. We'll get it to you, and we'll get you some spreadsheets so we're all on the same page.
We're
going to hand some stuff out, members, so be patient.
Bring it to $100.
Sure.
Why not?
It will be moved, and we prepared it after we're done.
Oh, okay.
You're going to do the egg stuff?
Yes. But Dan will probably go through the spreadsheet first.
Well, we just passed it. We decided to spend taxpayers' money and give them $5,000 just because they wanted it.
You can do lame.
Oh, we'll do spreadsheets first.
$5,000. A lot of people want $5,000. Dumbest thing I ever heard.
Vickerman was over here.
I don't know.
Was he here?
No. Hogan is running.
No.
Scogan's in charge here.
Tell me that Bill will go over to this committee.
I don't think it's controversial at all.
Oh, it didn't seem to indicate that he wasn't going to be
there. For both counties, townships, and
okay. All right, so when it comes up in the policy, I don't trust you. I go to Target. Well, I was at Target one day. Everything in here. Do you know anything about me?
Members, you'll be getting four documents. You'll be getting an Article 1, a thicker document. An Article 2 is a front and back document. And then you'll get two spreadsheets, or one spreadsheet, and then the summary sheet will also be coming out.
Excuse me.
But she's on it.
Nothing safe.
Thanks.
Hands off your cookie. Ooh. You should really share that cookie.
Should.
What kind of cookie is
maybe
that?
You better give it to me. Keep it away from Ingebrigtsen.
All right, members, I think we'll have Mr. Mueller get us. We'll get us started with our the spreadsheet. Mr. Mueller, which one do you want to start us with?
Mr. Chairman, I'll start with the Agriculture and Veterans Budget General Fund Summary Sheet.
Oh.
One pager.
I have it on this side of the table.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we started on that side. We'll get you some.
And now let's talk a little broadly about the target and such first. Basically, as been discussed, the division has a target of a 7% reduction of its total general fund base. The total base general fund for this budget division is $175.286 million. 7% of that would be a $12.27 million reduction. And I'll work off the one pager in summary fashion to see how we get there, and then we'll go through the detail pages. Starting at the top, the Department of Agriculture has a base of, now these are all biennial numbers I'll be talking about, so I'll be talking numbers from the 2010-11 amount, has a base of $79.5 million. On the detailed spreadsheet, there'll be $5.69 million of reductions, which is just a little bit above the 7%. It's actually about a 7.2% reduction. And then there's 1.33 of new spending in the bill. Most of this is one time. So the net reduction to the Department of Ag is $4.36 million, or 5.5%. The next department, Animal Health Board, their base is $10.8 million. A 7% cut is a $758,000 reduction. Then there's $400,000 of new spending for the Animal Health Board for bovine TB. So their net reduction is 3.3%. The AURI, has a base of $6.2 million. A 7% reduction to their base is $434,000. There's no additions for AURI, so their net reduction is 7%, or the 434. Now to Department of Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs, as you'll note, there are no reductions to those two departments in this on the spreadsheet or in the bill. Department of Military Affairs, their base is $39.1 million. No reduction. Then there's some one-time additional spending of $1.52 million. And I'll get to the, when I go through the detailed budget, we'll talk about what that's for. Veterans Affairs, base of $39.6 million, no reduction, and $500,000 in new spending, and that one is ongoing. Then the other major change in this proposal, which helps us get to our target, is changing the appropriation for the GI Bill and Veterans Affairs from a direct appropriation to an open appropriation. Right now, there's about $6 million in the base per year for the GI Bill and Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. If we change that to an open appropriation and have finance pay what the actual cost of the program is, there's a net savings of about $9.1 million. Since this program was started 2 years ago, the base budget has been significantly higher than what is actually being spent on that program. Last year, we had a number of reductions to that program. This is just changing the funding mechanism to the program so that it becomes a forecasted program. So it will not be reduced or cut. It will actually be paid the amount that based on their enrollment. And actually now there's no cap in the bill, and it actually could go above $6 million per year. So we don't anticipate that happening. But so then on total, you'll see total for all the agencies, we have $6.88 million of reductions, which is about 3.9%, $3.75 million of additional spending, gets us the net of $1.8 million. And then this, when you add in the savings to our base by changing the GI Bill, that's another $9.1 million, and that gets us to our 7% reduction to our base of $12.2 million. Next, I'd like to work off of our detailed spreadsheet, and we'll go into a little bit more detail about how we get to those net numbers. We'll start with the Department of Ag. I'll be working off the middle column that's called Senate Budget, fiscal year 2010 and 2011. The two columns next to that especially the second one over, shows what the Senate changes are compared to the governor's. The first one, line 14, the plant surveys, the governor had a $200,000 per year reduction. The Senate, this proposal has no reduction. The wolf and elk damage compensation, we're taking the governor's proposal, the recommended additions that were in the governor's bill. The noxious weed law changes, we have some one-time money to help the department administer those changes, $50,000. The next, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down from lines 17 down to 22 are all reductions that were in the governor's proposal. Line 23 is the bill that we have just heard, the grant to the St. Paul Growers Association for $25,000. That's one time. Line 24 is a Senate reduction, is a reduction in the Senate proposal of $453,000 per year to the marketing and development portion of the Department of Ag. The next item, the governor had $500,000 per year for an Ag 21 grant program. The Senate, this proposal is not doing that. Line 27, there's a one-time reduction to the ethanol payments of $2.24 million. So what that will just do is decrease the amount of money that is available for deficiency payments in 2011. But in the tails, 2012 and 13, there's no reduction to the ethanol base at all. It stays at $15.168 million, I think it is. So it's just a one-time fiscal year 2011 reduction in the ethanol payments. Line 28 is a reduction to the dairy development program. The governor had $500,000 per year reduction. The Senate proposal is $300 per year. And this would still leave about $705,000 per year in the program. Line 29, the governor had a $50,000 per year administrative reduction. The Senate has $350,000 per year. And then the last four lines there are some additional spending items on the Senate side. Senator Stump's bill for the Turf Seed Council is additional $50,000 per year. That is ongoing. There's a $30,000 for Senator Chaudhry's bill dealing with Star Farms, just asking for a report and helping them to pay for that. The Feeding Minnesota Task Force, Senator Vickerman had a bill on that, just providing $25,000 for the administration, for the department to help administer that task force. And then a one-time $1 million payment to help with the operations of the veterinarian diagnostic lab. It's from Senator Dill bill. Those are all the changes to the general fund. Under agriculture fund. Oh, okay. Actually, the first one, I have a mistake on this one. The line 37, the ag chemical response and reimbursement costs of $271,000 per year, that's on the governor's line, should be carried over to the Senate side. So we do have that in this proposal.
Same numbers, Mr. Mueller?
Yes, $271,000 per year. And that'll be ongoing.
Thank you.
And these are statutory appropriations, so the spending just happens. They're not actual appropriations in the bill. So, but there'll be language in the bill that authorizes that additional spending to happen. Line number 38. Line number 38, the additional spending for the pesticide dealer license of $21,000 per year that was in the governor's budget is not in this one. The dairy food inspection fees, $37,000 per year, that is in this proposal, and that is tied to a fee increase later, as we'll see down there. And that amount, the Senate has a little bit different language than what was in the governor's proposal. And so it may or may not get the $37,000. We'll have to get a new fiscal note on that, but it's probably pretty close. So that number may change. And then the pesticide program funding, this was in the governor's bill, was a pretty large increase of pesticide fees and also spending to fund the pesticide program. That is not in this proposal. This proposal also carries the governor's clean water fund initiatives of $3.075 million in fiscal year 10 and $5.85 million in fiscal year 2011. This amount will stay in this bill as we leave the division. When we get to the full finance committee, the clean water appropriations will probably be removed from the bill and all be included in one clean water package that would be coming out of Senator Anderson's committee. But this is just to get – this is just the governor's numbers for clean water. Below that are all the different agency totals. As you can see, the total department spending will now be $161.524 million. Actually, be a little bit higher than that when we include that line 37 in. Okay. So that the Department of Ag will actually have a net increase over the forecast of about $4.6 million of additional spending over the base, but a net reduction on the general fund side. The revenue changes you'll see on lines 51 through 54, there's a small increase for the dairy food and inspection fees. There's language in the bill for that. And like I said, we'll have to get the department to run some new numbers on that to see if that has changed. It may be different than the 37. And then there's a small fee increase on reporting penalties that's in the bill. That was in a Senator Vickerman bill that raises a little bit of additional revenue, $3,000 per year. Now, these are all revenues that are going to the Ag Fund. And then the Senate bill does not have the pesticide program fee increases that were in the governor's proposal of $2.7 million per year. On to the Animal Health Board.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and members, before we leave the Ag Department, could I ask Mr. Knopf a question with regard to the fees on 37, 38, 39, and 40? Could you walk me through a little bit about what we did there last year? We used to have a two every other year program, and now they went to some annual, and the department came in with this language. And is there something that the committee should understand as to why we're not supporting the governor's fees here?
Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that was changed last year to annual. There was some substantial changes in the way the waste collection program worked for pesticides. And the agency came in with a proposal this year as part of the governor's budget to basically fix it, the change, because the change cost a huge cost problem for the pesticide regulatory account. And the department's solution was to come in with additional fee increase, a fairly substantive fee increase, to correct the problem. And it's not included. The language that I've seen hasn't really been worked out yet to make it work properly. Mm-hmm. And it's not included here. Instead, what this bill does is goes back to a, you'll see in the language, it goes back to every other year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Connolly.
Follow up? Other questions, Senator Chaudhry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on that, so is the intent to try and clarify that language so that we can put those fees in here as this bill moves forward?
Mr. Knopf? Chair, I'm not sure I can answer that question. That's really up to the members, whether it gets included or not. It would depend on where in the process. You know, one of the issues is the Senate could come in with the 2 years and the House come in with the fees and work something out in conference, or it could be worked out maybe in the full Finance Committee if something can be put in the bill. I'm not sure where Senator Vickerman is going to want to deal with this.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, I'd be interested at least in the attempt to try and work out the proper language for the fees, and then we can certainly talk amongst the committee about whether and when we want to add it back into the bill, whether it be in conference or beforehand.
Mr. Chairman, just a note on this. I first saw the language over the weekend. That's okay. Kind of being worked out, and I've not been part of the discussions, and I wasn't sure. I don't think it works properly yet.
It's fine.
Mr. Chaudhry?
But, you know, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, if we can continue to make that effort, I'd appreciate it. And then at least to know if it's feasible to have proper language for the fees, and then we can then move from there and talking amongst the committee on where and when to insert that language. I'm interested in having the fees, and I certainly understand mechanical problems, but if we could just work to address those, be much appreciated.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, without funding for these, is there going to be a reduction in FTEs here or for the department, or do you have any idea?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't be my understanding that would happen. Most of this money flows out for the collection of pesticides to counties.
Mr. Chairman, you could ask Senator Vickerman what his feelings are on this.
Senator Vickerman, input on the language or the fees? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of committee, my name is Joe Martin. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Agriculture. In terms of the question of what the impact would be to the department without the revenue increase, it will be very real. While the waste pesticide collection program has been a draw on the account, we also are facing some shortfalls in terms of the pesticide regulatory account, and if without any additional revenue, we'd be looking at about 12 FTEs that would be eliminated, and that would be six vacancies, critical vacancies that would go unfilled, and probably about six layoffs. So there's impact. Will be an impact on staff and the programs that are run, the regulatory programs that are run.
Senator Scoyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Martin, but if the Senate was to return to the language before we had the changes of last year, you would also then not be required to do this every year, and you would go to an every other year. And if my recollection was, a number of these sites had relatively small amounts that you were picking up on an annual basis. So would there be some middle ground here that would be more efficient and save us some of these dollars also?
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, members, there are ways to achieve cost savings in the waste pesticide collection program with changes. The point I was making earlier is, though, that the fee increase as proposed wasn't solely proposed due to the increased cost of waste pesticide collection. The fees proposed were also in terms of dealing and adequately staffing our regulatory programs. So it is there is two legs of that stool.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Martin, you mentioned 12. If we didn't get this, you know, the pesticide collection would be reduced, but also the 12 FTEs, you said they're mostly regulatory. I mean, I'd like to hear more about the functions of these FTEs than just the number. I mean, what would we be losing in terms of things that are done out in the field by these 12 FTEs?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, members, the loss of staff would impact several of the regulatory responsibilities within pesticide, the unit ranging from the inspections, use and misuse, enforcement actions, surface water monitoring for pesticides, some contract work, data practices. It really will impact several aspects of our regulatory responsibilities.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Scoyer, did you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe just a comment. Well, I think it's good that we're going to have hopefully the language a little different than the House, so that will allow the department and the members and the conference committee, whoever they are, to continue to work on this to make sure that we're doing this well and efficiently.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Martin, can you see anything in this budget that we've got that you could cut and use that money in this pesticide program? Or is there any way to achieve some additional efficiencies, like maybe not picking it up for 3 years? We were talking about going every other year. We've already done a full year, I think, last year. Maybe we can skip it for 2 or 3 years and then start picking it up again.
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, members, I know there's been several discussions about what is the best waste pesticide collection. I would say the program that we are implementing right now is probably one of the most aggressive waste pesticide programs that we've had for some time. Obviously, you're going to achieve cost savings if you scale back the amount of collections, but you always have to balance with what the expectations for service are. So I guess to answer your question, yes, there could be cost savings achieved if we wanted to reduce collection opportunities. That will be a question for the committee to and the department to, and obviously there are county partners to answer.
Mr. Mueller, take us to line 60.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members, on to the Animal Health Board.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Again, most of these changes were in the governor's proposal. The only difference here is on line 66, the general operating budget reduction. The governor had $322,000 per year. The Senate has $239,000, and that was to get us to a net reduction of 7% before the new addition of $200,000 per year for the bovine TB was added. Next page, we get to the AURI. The governor had a 50% reduction, or a $1.55 million reduction to AURI per year. The Senate has a 7% reduction, which is $217,000 per year. Department of Military Affairs, this proposal has no reductions to Department of Military Affairs. The governor's supplemental budget had $1.5 million per year added for the tuition reimbursement program. This proposal has $1.5 million one time to help them get through fiscal year 2010 if there's a shortfall there. But we did not have the tails target to sort of continue that on, and we'll have to maybe come back next year and see if that shortfall continues based on just sort of a lot of other factors that can go into that based on how much the mm-hmm. feds can contribute and what their enrollment is and other things. So, and then there's a $20,000 one-time grant for the Senator Ingebrigtsen proposal, Senate File 625. On to Department of Veterans Affairs. There is no reduction to the Department of Veterans Affairs. The governor had a technology initiative of $980,000 per year. That is not contained in the Senate proposal. And then we have, again, there the lines 101 and 102, the switching of funding the GI Bill from a direct appropriation to an open appropriation. And basically, we left $100,000 of direct appropriations. That's to fund the administration of the program, and the remaining part of the program will then be funded with an open appropriation. And that gets us down to the various totals at the bottom there. In comparison to the governor's budget, the governor had a net $300,000 reduction to the general fund base, which was a 0.2% reduction in this budget area. And again, we had a 7% reduction target, which was $12.2 million in both the fiscal year 2010 and out in the tails in 2012 and 13. We also had a 7% reduction we had to meet. So that is the details, and I'll answer any questions.
Mr. Mueller, I'm going to just take you back to line 100. I don't know if you skipped it or if I missed it, but some additional spending.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for catching that. Line 100, there's additional $250,000 per year added to the MACV program. This was from a Senator Erickson Ropes bill. And what's going on there is there's only $250,000 in the current budget base, but in fiscal year 2010 and 2011, this program was getting considerably more money than that, almost $1 million. But that was because of a lot of one-time funding in the current biennium that was then dropping off the table. So this proposal would add $250,000 to their base, which is basically doubling the base for that program. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for pointing that out.
And members, you might remember that's kind of that safety net piece that homeless vets fall into when no other agency is picking them up. So. Questions for Mr. Mueller on the budget numbers? Then we'll ask Mr. Knopf, I believe, is going to walk us through the Article 1, the ag portion of the omnibus bill. Mr. Knopf?
And Mr. Chairman, members, I'll try to do this quickly. The page 1 is basically the boilerplate language for appropriation bill. You'll see the agency totals, but you'll see the blanks, and those will be filled in based on the spreadsheet. If you look at page 2, of the Ag Vets Article 1 document, the first rider on 2.5 is a base rider. 2.9 through 2.24 are the basically from the governor's budget bill, 1779, and it includes the clean water appropriation language. Again, the numbers will be from the spreadsheet. Starting on 2.25, you'll see the language on the compensation for elk and at livestock destroyed by crippled by gray wolves. That's from Senate File 324, Senator Stumpf. It was amended by the committee. There was a 2009 appropriation, but I know Mr. Mueller didn't have the 2009 in it, so that you won't see language for a 2009 appropriation in there. That's the one difference from the bill. Otherwise, through 3.7, that was Senator Stumpf's bill. 3.8 to 3.10, that's based on the fiscal note for Senator Kubley's bill. The department said there will be some additional costs, especially with the task force being created. And so that's included here. Senator Kubley's bill, you'll see later the language of that. If you look on page 3, line 16, That's a base rider in the Minnesota Grown account. The bottom rider on the sustainable agriculture grants, that's a base rider also on the bottom of page 3. On page 4, you'll see the Ag BMP loan program. That's 4.9 to 4.19. That's from the governor's recommendations, which are contained in Senate File 1779. 4.20 and so on is the is a base rider dealing with the training for local officials on livestock siting issues and local zoning. That's been carried for a number of years. 5.3 on page 5, that's the base rider. Again, that was discussed earlier when Senator Moy had her bill up in committee. That's the payment for organic certification for growers in their first 5 years. And Mr. Chairman, on the bottom of that page, on 5.34, that's the base rider for the ethanol program. There is one addition on the, Mr. Mueller had mentioned this on the top of page 6, on 6.2, you'll see the blanks there. It's a one-time reduction. So it says the second year reduction of blank is a one-time. It will take the numbers from Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet, but that's to make it clear that the base stays in this program in the future, even though the second year is being reduced by that amount. And then, Mr. Chairman, on 6.21, that's a base rider on the Dairy Enhancement and Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. And then on 7.7, basically all those riders on page 7 are base riders. You got the county fairs and all the other things that are involved there. I don't know, go into any detail. Those have been carried for a number of years. On 8.6, you'll see the Minnesota Turf Seed Council. That's the rider from Senator Stumpf. On Senate File 448, as was amended by committee, there was some language that was taken out of there in committee. And you'll see that they do have to actively participate in the AURI Energy Roundtable, Renewable Energy Roundtable. And then the bottom of page 8, that's another base rider on the Second Harvest Heartland. And on page 9, that's a base rider on the mental health counseling. Same with the Horticultural Society as a base rider. 9.27 to 9.32, this is from Senator Dill's Senate File 754. It is a one-year only. When Mr. Mueller went through the spreadsheet, it's money for 1 year for the vet diagnostic lab. And 9.33 and on to the next page from Senator Chaudhry's bill on the Star Farms program. This was his bill created a Star Farms board and program. What this is, it was discussed during the committee meeting about scaling back to a basically coming up with a proposal. So what this does is has the commissioner consult with other state and local interested parties that are named here. Many of them are farm groups, conservation groups, legislators, other interested persons to come up with a proposal for next year. And it's a one-time. There was some money in the, I think $30,000 in the spreadsheet for this. 10.9 to 10.12. That's for the Feeding Minnesota Task Force, and that again is a one-time appropriation to pay for the report that's due next February. And then, Mr. Chairman, out of the Board of Animal Health, we've got just a number of base riders there that aren't anything new. Those have been carried for a while. Go over to page 11, you see the base rider for AURI. Again, just base riders that nothing new here from the last year or from 2 years ago. And then, Mr. Chairman, get into the statutory language changes now. Section 6, that was in Senator Vickerman's bill, 1779. Same with Section 7. It's the governor's recommendation. And basically, it just aligns itself with the increased appropriation for the livestock and elk damage so that it's basically, there was a dollar figure in there before. It needs to be changed to basically the amount expressly appropriated for that purpose to line up with the new appropriation. And then in Section 8 on page 12, you've got the contracts appropriation. There was a reporting requirement that the commissioner had for this, and that's being stricken. It was a recommendation of the administration as contained in Senate File 1779. Section 9 is from Senator Dill's Senate File 1241, and this has to do with the Shared Savings Loan Program for Sustainable Practices. And it's basically as the bill was amended in committee on 12.28, Senator Skoy moved to bump up the loans for four persons, and that's included here. And then, Mr. Chairman, we'll have a number of provisions that are from Senator Cooley's bill, Senate File 1410. The committee heard this as a policy bill, and I don't know that we need to go into much detail, but it's basically section, it's basically all, I'll go by page here, it's a little faster, page 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. The only thing I probably should point out is there were a couple of them, this bill was heard in the Environment and Energy Division, and there were a couple of amendments, some little tweaks to the bill that were fairly minor that are included in this. So this committee hasn't seen those changes. And the one, the first one you'll see is on page 18. It basically, there was language in there that wouldn't require the notice to be published in the newspaper and was going to allow it to be on a website, and it was changed back to requiring the publication in the newspaper still and not allow it just the website only.
That's on line 28, Mr. Knopf?
Well, it's 18.4 and 18.5.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
Then also, well, yes, the one amendment was on 18.26 and 18.27. Those, the language you don't see there was contained in the bill before. Mr. Chairman, there was another provision, and I thought I had it marked on mine. Oh, it had to do with control. Actually, it was earlier. I'm sorry. Page 13. I want to make sure the committee understands this, since it was another division that made that change since you've seen it. On 13.24 to 13.25, there was an amendment to also say that when you're talking about lawful method of control, that it does not cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment as defined in the pesticide law. You're already prohibited from doing that. This is really more of a reminder that when the control occurs, that you have to comply with that provision in the pesticide law, that any pesticide application cannot have unreasonable adverse effects on the environment. So I just wanted to point out those changes. Otherwise, we can go all the way through page 20, 21, 22. Well, in 22, there are some minor changes, just changing this from a fund to an account and putting it in the ag fund. That we included in this version of it. 23 is all from Senator Kubley's bill. 24, all the way through page 25, line 10, the expiration date for the advisory committee. And then, Mr. Chairman, starting on section 37, we've got a definition of agricultural pesticide, and you'll see down below a non-agricultural pesticide can divide up how these things are determined. And it has to do with some changes that were made last year on the West Waste Pesticide Program. We'll see that in a minute. And then there's also a slight change to distribute or enter the state to make sure that it's when it's coming into the state on 25.18. Those were all in Senate File 1770 and recommended by the administration.
And Mr. Knopf, these weren't identified or defined before?
Mr. Chairman, no, they weren't. It was in last year's bill that changed the waste pesticide program. It talked about the dichotomy between agricultural and non-agricultural pesticides. Generally, that's known because it has, as it's described here, but this would make it very clear that if it meets the federal worker protection use requirements, then it's an agricultural pesticide. If there aren't worker protection requirements, then it's a non-agricultural pesticide.
Question, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, I don't get it.
Mr. Knopf, Senator Dill doesn't get it.
When it says agricultural, that I can understand that. But when it says non-agricultural, what does this worker protection thing have to do with that?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, is my understanding, and I don't make a habit of reading these labels, but as I understand the labels, if there are worker protection requirements, then it's an agricultural pesticide. Those are only put on agricultural pesticides.
How about rat poison?
Mr. Chairman, again, I'm not an expert on pesticide labels, but as I understand it, There is that dichotomy in it, and this was to clarify. This was recommended by the administration. Mr. Buzicki may know more about rat poison.
Senator Dill, do you need someone to come to the table and explain the?
And Mr. Chairman, the only reason these definitions are used is for the waste pesticide program. It has no other application in the pesticide law. These terms aren't used anywhere else in the pesticide law, except for the
collection.
The collection program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, or anybody, what's an example of a non-agricultural pesticide?
Well, I think we might have someone at the table who can tell us that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Stoddard with the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division of the Department of Ag. Mr. Chair, members, this language was introduced as part of the resolution to the waste pesticide funding issue, and the idea along this was that there might be different fees for agricultural versus non-agricultural, and then the fees for non-agricultural will be used to fund household hazardous waste collections.
Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, does that mean that... Well, give me an example of a non-agricultural pesticide.
Mr. Stoddard.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, the federal requirements for worker protection safety are only present on what we're calling ag pesticides, so that's typically crop protection product, which might be used in a greenhouse, might be used for forestry, I think, and also for traditional ag uses. Everything else would not have that labeling. So everything else would be considered a non-ag. It could include any kind of sanitizers and disinfectants. It could include a pesticide that's used for a pool chlorination. Basically anything that's not ag.
Mr. Stoddard, whether or not it's used in an agricultural use, if it doesn't have that labeling, then it's just classified as non-ag?
Sure, that's correct.
Follow-up, Senator Dill?
I'll let it go for right now.
Thank you, Mr. Stoddard. And Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chairman, the next one on page or on line 25.24, you've got the implementation language. We heard this in Senator Vickerman's bill earlier on Senate File 556, and it would allow the commissioner to limit the type and quantity of waste pesticides accepted and may assess pesticide end users for portions of the cost. We again, heard that in Senator Vickerman's bill earlier this session. Section 41 on page 25 and 26. Again, that was in Senator Vickerman's bill, although you'll see some new language here on 26.3 where it says that the commissioner must designate a place in each county of the state that is available at least every other year for persons to dispose of unused portions of agricultural pesticides. And then in paragraph B, again, on 26.8, it says that current law is every year, and it says for periodic disposal opportunities every other year in each county. And then there is a technical, Mr. Chairman, on 26.11 to delete the new language and 26.12 delete everything before the period. That has to do with the language that we discussed earlier that the department was proposing for some new fees on pesticides, and it doesn't exist here. So if you could just include that, incorporate that in the amendment. So we would delete the new language on 26.11 and delete everything before the period on 26.12. I think you can do that just to incorporate into the amendment.
We'll incorporate that into our deletal.
And then, Mr. Chairman, so that's basically, there's a little bit of a rewording from Senator Vickerman's language on 26.15. It just makes it clear that they still have to have the quantity collected regardless of how they're recording the information. And then on 26.24, this is Senator Erickson Rope's bill on Senate File 691, as amended by the committee on the pesticide application on railroad property. And it does include the language on the unless on 26.33 that the committee adopted, unless the pesticide is specifically labeled for that use. And then we have the misuse reporting. That's the same language. Then on Section 43, that was this is from Senator Vickerman's Senate File 556. This again was heard earlier this year. This is in the fertilizer law, and these are the changes that the agency was recommending, changing the effective, basically changing these license periods to be the calendar year rather than the fiscal year. So a lot of the information, plus the another part of this proposal, is to have it collected at the retail level rather than at the manufacturer level. And so you'll see those changes throughout. Again, this was discussed by this committee, and that goes all the way through 29.15, was all part of Senator Vickerman's bill that was heard by the committee earlier this session. Section 47, this is dealing with the Commissioner's Incident Response Program related costs. This was a Mr. Mueller. That's the $277,000 per year. This was the provision that allows them to use money from ACRA for those costs. And then Section 48, this again was in Senator Vickerman's bill on Senate File 1779. It's again a recommendation of the administration. And Mr. Mueller went through these in the spreadsheet. This is the reinspection fee for food processors, basically. And you can see that they're doubling the reinspection fees. And then also there's a $200 or $300 for a subsequent reinspection of this for the same violation, which is could be 50%, so it could even be higher than the 300. Section 49 is from Senator Vickerman's 1507. It's the Feeding Minnesota Task Force. The language as it came out of the State and Local Operations Committee, that's through 31.7. And then Section 50, this was again another recommendation of the agency on the fees for dairy farm reinspections. And as the committee, when the committee looked at this language earlier in the session, there was some concern over that it was going from $45 to $100 for all dairy farms. Mm-hmm. And what this does is it puts in two classes of fees. Basically, if you're fewer than 100 cows, it's $60 per reinspection. And if you're over 100 cows, it's $150 per reinspection. So it has a two-tiered fee system rather than just going from $45 to $100 for all dairy farms. Section 51 was a recommendation of the administration, and it eliminates some language on the ethanol producer payment program. There was some language on disclosure. Since that program is basically sunsetting this June for new production, I think the administration was recommending that we don't need the disclosure. After this fiscal year, we'll be only paying for deficiency payments and not new production. So it was a recommendation of the administration to eliminate that language. And then on, it goes all the way through to page 33. And at the bottom of page 33, you'll see some changes. These are from Senator Dill's bill dealing with the RFA loan programs and increasing those levels. You'll see that, and it's from Senate File 1241. So Section 52, again, these were heard by the committee earlier this year. You'll see Senator, Section 52 is in that bill. Also, Section 53, 54, 55, and 56, all affecting loan participation programs in the RFA. Section 57, this was in Senator Scoy's bill last year dealing with the bovine tuberculosis control assessment. It's that temporary assessment that was put on for a year. There were some issues that we found during the interim on how the fees would be collected, and this basically what this does is aligns the law with how it's being implemented, because there were some issues and there were some discussions about that, and this would basically put the law the same as it would have been had we done it the right way the first time on some of these. And so this would just clarify all of that. I think that the governor's budget had an all new language, but it didn't seem to make sense to me to just create it again. We should be amending last year's law. Mr. Chairman, then on Section 58, the deadline for appointments, that's for the Feeding Minnesota Task Force. And the next section, Section 59, deals with the appointments under that's the Noxious Weed Task Force that we created in Senator Kubley's bill. And then on the repealers, I can go through those quickly here. The first one you see there are 17.49 Subdivision 3. That's a recommendation of the administration, and that's the aquaculture report. Section 38.02 Subdivisions 3 and 4, there's certain fair reimbursements. As I understand it, there really is no one that gets reimbursed under those programs anymore, but these were recommended by the administration. And then the long list of repealers are all in Chapter 41. Those are from Senator Dill's bill, Senate File 1241, and that's the Family Farm Security Program, since that program will now cease to be in existence. And this basically repeals all of the language for the Family Farm Security Program. And On 36.7, the repealer of 84.02, that was a committee amendment to Senator Stump's bill, Senate File 448, and that repeals the native prairie provisions that are in Section 84.02. And then the effective date, the repealer effective date is the day following enactment. And then there is a second article, actually, here, even though it says Article 1. The RFA bonds, thought it would be best to carry that in a separate article. And this has blanks in the appropriation. I think when Mr. Mueller was going through the spreadsheet, there were blanks there, too. As I understand it, the dollar amount will be $35 million for the RFA bonds, as is what I'm led to believe. And so that those blanks then would be 35. So this would be $35 million in new bonding authority for the RFA that would be carried in this bill. And these are general obligation bonds. They're user finance general obligation bonds, but it requires this to be a House file, but doesn't require a 60% vote because there's a specific provision in the Constitution that provides for these bonds, and that's not. It's in a different part than the 3/5 majority. So it does need to be in a House file because it could potentially do a property tax if the state didn't pay back these bonds. So it always has to be in a House file, but it doesn't need to be the 60% majority. So that's the end of that document.
Questions for Mr. Knopf? We'll come back to this for those of you who have amendments after we go through the veterans portion. So, but if you have specific questions right now, Mr. Knopf can try to answer them. Mr. Bodern, you want to take us through the vets Article 2?
Mr. Chairman, this will be very brief. I will say that the staff will correct the article numbering. That was brought to my attention. So you're actually, Article 2 should be 3 and so forth. Section 1 is the boilerplate language for the appropriations. And then on page 1, beginning on line 16, you'll see the rider for the MACV, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. The language there is intended to make it clear that the vet money is being added to the base and must remain in the base. And then there is a provision made for costs of administering the GI Bill program. And in Section 3, you'll see the language you see there makes that an open and standing appropriation for the amount necessary to pay those benefits. Article 4, Military Affairs, there is also the standard boilerplate there. About the only new item I will call your attention to is on page 2 on line 19. That is the money for Senator Ingebretson's bill. That pretty much takes care of veterans and military affairs.
Questions for Mr. Bonner? Before we have others who want to speak for or against the bill, amendments to the bill. Senator Dill, did you have a question or a comment?
I just wanted to inquire, Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Knopf can let me know on the appropriation for the county agricultural fairs, county fairs, did that stay the same or did we?
It's the same.
It's the same.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, that is the same. We did not make any reductions to that, so it's the same amount that they received in the current biennium.
And did the governor have the same, too?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, yes.
Okay. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment from Senator Kubley that he asked me to offer since he is out of the room and presenting a bill.
Okay.
This is to the noxious weed bill that's part of the big bill. And if you'll recall, members, we had quite a discussion about the noxious weed and who is going to be out there inspecting and that sort of thing. So he took the conversation back to the stakeholders, and what you see before you in this amendment is agreed language that all stakeholders have come to agreement on. I see heads bobbing back there and thumbs up. So they have county-designated employees, and there's some language here under the county agricultural inspectors about who's going to carry out the duties and that sort of thing. So if there are members that want to come to the table to explain or answer questions, if the committee has questions.
Before we do that, Senator Erickson-Ropes, we are moving the 04 here, and we have a technical amendment here, I believe. Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, on line 1.23, that should be subdivision 1A. Not one.
and we will incorporate that into the amendment. Welcome to the committee. Please, let's start to my right. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Chaplin. I am with the Nature Conservancy. I am a senior conservation scientist. I'm also a board member of the Midwest Invasive Plant Network, and I was a member of the Noxious Weed Task Force that helped make suggestions for the language in this bill. I'll say just a couple of things, is that this Noxious Weed Task Force consisted of 11 stakeholder groups that were involved all the way from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association to farm groups to the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Nature Conservancy, townships were involved. It was quite a broad array, and we put together the initial language over about a year's period, and we reached near unanimous agreement, all except on one provision. What we're coming back with this amendment that now brings us to complete agreement on the language of this bill. So if there's any questions.
Questions for Mr. Chaplin. To my left, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chaplin, what was the one thing you couldn't agree on?
It was the role of the county agricultural inspector, whether there must be a county agricultural inspector appointed or whether or not that was an option. And the way that we've dealt with this now was to specify the required duties of the county agricultural inspectors or a designated county employee, and then also the optional activities or responsibilities of the county agricultural inspectors that county boards could choose to implement.
Follow-up, Senator Dill?
No.
Witness to my left, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I'll keep this extremely brief. I'm Ryan O'Connor from the Association of Minnesota Counties. I had the opportunity to testify in this bill a few times. It was coming through, and I think Mr. Chaplin just specified the changes very well. Basically, the intent was to add increased transparency to what roles were required on behalf of counties and what roles were optional for them to be involved in if they so chose. It did not change. Those duties are not changed from the amendment from the original draft. All it does is make it much more transparent and clear for everyone involved. And so all stakeholders felt much more comfortable with that additional transparency. Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. O'Connor or Mr. Chaplin? Others who would like to speak to this amendment? Members, we have the 04 in front of us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Other amendments? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another one on the farmer lender mediation bill, and that's being passed out.
Is this your 9-2?
Okay.
Yes, it is 2-2. Yes.
The 9-2.
9-2.
We'll be passing it out, members. And while it's coming around, Erickson, Senator, maybe you'd look. It is out?
Yes.
You have it before you, the 9-2, Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the bill that this committee heard. It just has not been adopted into the omnibus bill yet or the larger bill. So I did check earlier today. There was a question as to whether higher ed has funded this program for the entire time it's been in existence. And it was confirmed in the higher ed committee today by Todd Iverson speaking on behalf of the University of Minnesota that it is included within their ag special and that they are funding it. I put it before this committee to include the language in our finance bill because it does have some financial implications in the text as we move from the $5,000 trigger to the $10,000 trigger, and that may incur some additional fiscal impact for the program. So, but right now it's not in the bill, so it needs to be amended in.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Erickson-Ropes, did we extend this 4 years, or did we
Yes, sir.
Is that what this is, the same as the bill that was in front of the committee?
Yes, sir.
Senator Erickson-Ropes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, yes.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Anyone who would like to present witness for or against the amendment? Seeing one man rushing to the batting cage here, let's give him an opportunity. Welcome to the committee.
My name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
And you should amend this into this this particular bill. You'll find its companion over in the House side. Just one quick note, and I know I'm not supposed to talk about the other body, but I'm going to real quickly just mention something that's going on here. The Senate made an increase from $5,000 to $10,000 in terms of the amount that is the trigger for mediation. I would suggest to you that that's going to be more confusing than it's going to be helpful, and I'm not being critical of the Senate by any stretch of the imagination. But the House does not have that, and we're trying to work with the House right now to get some language that will help us get the proper do a study and get the proper number in place so that we can come back to you next year and come up with this. If I were to just continue, I might suggest that if you wanted to have both of the bills consistent, you'd simply take what is indicated as subdivision 6 in this bill and incorporate it into yours.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Appitz. I have talked to Mr. Appitz about this, and if the committee will recall, when I presented the bill originally, I wanted to stick with the $5,000 trigger and have some more conversation over the interim about exactly where we need to go with that, whether it's up or down or to what number. And this committee did increase it to $10,000, and since it's not on the House side, and Mr. Appitz, who testified somewhat in opposition of my bill, now agrees that we need to go back to the $5,000 trigger input that we're getting from the banks and from the program director. All agree that it's just that $5,000 move is going to cause a lot more confusion than it's worth. And maybe we need to pull back and have some more conversation over the interim. So we're back to my original proposal, and if it's okay with this committee to do that, because all parties seem to think that that $5,000 trigger is just changing that from 5 to 10, putting out the paperwork, trying to get people not to it's just going to – the compliance and implementation piece is problematic, so – I would ask the committee if we could leave the four-year sunset deadline and then revert back to the 5,000.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Erickson-Ropes, I believe I'm the one that made the motion to increase
this. Yes, sir.
And I think members, I mean, I understand the reason to not be confusing in the end, but I also want to make sure that the House understands that the Senate thinks it's a reasonable thing to be achieving an increase of some number in this dollar amount. And so while we can move to remove this, lower this back to 5,000, I want to make sure that we're clear that we think that this needs to be explored. And Mr. Appitz, how are we going to be assured that that will happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoey, I'm hoping to draft some language which would amend the statutory statement that goes from the lender, from the creditor to the debtor, which articulates the amount of the debt that is going into mediation. With that number, then Extension Service could collect those numbers and come back to us next year and give us a sense of what the threshold is that is most common, the median, if you will, Senator Ropes, and give a report to you in that regard. I'm trying to come up with some language, and I haven't gotten it done before I sat here with you today.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Appitz. And Senator Scoy, you'll recall that the $10,000 was just double the $5,000 and not particularly attached to the amount of inflation that's increased since the program began. So we'd like to get something that's a little bit more accurate and tied to the mechanics of the program.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move to return to the to remove the new language and insert the stricken language wherever the $10,000 replaced $5,000. I believe it's in four places.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, I think
Mr. Kanoff.
I think all you need to do is just And right now, this is a bill as it was amended coming back to this committee. And what Senator Erickson Rope wants to do is put in what only the portion that she wants into Senator Vickerman's bill. I think the best motion would be just for Senator Erickson Rope to just make a motion to insert Section 6 into Senator Vickerman's Ag and Vets bill.
And then everything else stays the way it was. Yeah. Senator Erickson Rope, then.
So move to.
Would you withdraw this?
Mr. Chairman, no, we just have the language in front of us. We actually have Senator Vickerman's bill in front of us. So all Senator Erickson Rope needs to do is just ask to have Section 6 be adopted as an amendment to the Ag and Vets bill.
So, Mr. Chair, if I'm understanding, Mr. Knopf, I'll withdraw the 09 amendment.
I believe that's not needed.
Okay.
I think you just
only the Section 6 of the 09 amendment.
Would ask us to consider. Senator Erickson Ropes is asking us to consider Section 6 in her amendment to be adopted into the omnibus bill. Questions? That, members, is the extension language, just so you're clear. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The 0003, not sure which.
The 03.
Article it goes. Maybe Mr. Knopf can explain where this goes.
Amendment.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, it goes to the Ag article.
Is that appropriate
Article
now?
1. And it does say Article 1 on the amendment. So.
Is that appropriate now?
Senator Chaudhry, it's being handed out. We'll be looking at the 03.
I've spoken with Senator Vickerman and staff about this, and it was with staff's assistance that I drew this up. This is for the Clean Water Fund portion of this bill, and it relates somewhat to the Star Farms, but what the amendment is doing is increasing funding to the Livestock Environmental Quality Assurance Program, which we heard about earlier this session. And as we heard in the Star Farm testimony, we want to try and we spend a year trying to create a Star Farms program, and then and with the intent of morphing this Star Farms out of LEQA. And so this would increase funding for LEQA, and then if and when we were able to create a Star Farms program, that this money would then also be in existence for that as well. So it serves two purposes. First, to beef up LEQA, plain and simple, and then would provide for anticipated funding for Star Farms should LEQA morph into Star Farms next year. So that's the idea here. And there's milk producers are here to testify on this. I worked with them on this amendment, and certainly get Senator Vickerman's comments as well if he desires.
Members, I support this.
Senator Vickerman?
I did talk to Senator Chaudhry about it before, and I think it's a good idea. One willing to accept it.
Questions for Senator Chaudhry?
You're talking about things. It does have financial implications.
Seeing none, we have the 03 amendment in front of us, members. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry.
Just a quick question. Why don't I let Senator Skoy go ahead, and I'll ask
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I believe you have an amendment that I'm going to offer for you. On the document that I have, it's a 9A amendment, the Gold Star license plate.
Members, who will be passing out the 9A. This is a Gold Star license plate, members. This is a provision that I put in bill form, but we did not hear in our committee this year. About a week ago, the governor's office contacted me and asked if I would continue to pursue it. I asked Senator Vickerman if I could bring it to this committee. The Gold Star license plate is going to be eligible for persons who are survivors if a spouse or a son or daughter is killed while serving honorably in active service. The death of a service member after he or she has been discharged from the service from causes related to his service do not qualify. Gold Star status will be done by the Department of Defense. Motor vehicle, of course, we've got a provision in there that identifies what a motor vehicle is. It will be used on passenger automobiles, motorcycles, recreational vehicles, pickups, and vans. We are going to pay for this. The big rub early in the session, we knew we were going to be short on money, and we didn't know how we were going to pay for it. Chairmen of the transportation committees are not real interested in jumping through these hoops when we are short on money. But the Department of Veterans Affairs, through the Support Our Troops License Plate Fund, will be able to reimburse the Department of Public Safety for these plates. We found that trail of money, and I think Mr. Bodern can maybe better explain how that fund fills up and how that money is used. Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman, you'll see the funding provision is in Section 5 on the bottom of the amendment, and basically the Support Our Troops license plate is established in the statutes in Section 190.19. There are several purposes specified there. This would add a temporary authorization to use the money that's in that account, which is derived from the revenues from that plate, to pay for the cost of the production of the Gold Star license plate. And I would, this also requires agreement between the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs and the Commissioner of Public Safety on the terms of that payment.
Members, I will, you know, we did not hear this one. It was on my agenda to bring it forward, and then thought it was done until we found a funding source. Senator Vickerman has graciously offered to let me attach it to the omnibus bill, but I'll agree to your wishes. I do have an agreement with the governor's office and MDVA and DPS to allow this provision to go forward, and I would stand for questions. Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would support this amendment. I think it's a pretty clear idea. I do have a question about the eligible person. Or while serving honorably in active service, does that cover people who are home on leave and may become involved in a car accident as a civilian? I mean, I know that's a kind of this is the kind of questions that may come up, though, related to this.
I would have to refer to counsel on that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ropes, I don't know if Mr. Bodern. Give you a definitive answer on that. You might want to talk to the Department of Military Affairs on the definition of active service, but I don't think leave would be included within that, but I should double-check that.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, there's going to be some proof of Gold Star status that's going to be required, and that's where the department will weigh in after the person is deceased. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's my idea of a Gold Star mother is one whose son has died in combat.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that she's a Gold Star mother because her son died in a car accident has never occurred to me that that's even a possibility. Well, maybe I don't understand it right, but my understanding is that the Gold Star mothers I've seen in the parades and at Memorial Days and over the years have all been the mothers of children lost in combat.
We're going to get some clarification, I hope, here. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Mike Pugliese, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Veterans Affairs. I hope I can clear it up a little bit. To the best of my knowledge, Senator Ropes, yes, somebody that's home on leave and dies as a result of whatever, as long as it's not willful misconduct, would be considered to have died on active service, and the parents and the spouse would be eligible for this license plate.
Questions? Erickson-Ropes.
So, again, Mr. Chair, does this only cover service members who are serving during a time of conflict? What if it's a peacetime period?
Mr. McCleasy?
Mr. Chair, members? Ms. Keel advised me wisely, and it does only cover periods of conflict, and we did take that from the federal language.
Thank you. I have to leave.
Thank you, Senator Erickson-Ropes. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know about the Gold Star mothers that we see on Memorial Days and so forth. Would they be Gold Star mothers because their child was lost in a car accident when they were home on leave?
Mr. Chair and members. I should just switch with Christine. As chair and members, no, they would not be covered because we did take this language from the federal language, and they're not covered. It's only during periods of conflict.
Mr. Dill, Senator Dill.
Then what we have in this amendment, this amendment is not consistent with what we normally consider a Gold Star mother.
Oh, although I believe, Senator Dill, it is federal. It is what the federal language is, I believe.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. The federal definition dictates who the Gold Star family members are. So we're just adopting their language. So we would be consistent with that across the board.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just so I'm clear on this, too, because I'm also a little confused. So if you're qualified to be a Gold Star family member prior to the enactment of this, you would be one of the individuals who would qualify for a Gold Star license plate.
Mr. McLeese?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct.
That makes sense. I renew my motion on the A9 amendment.
Senator Scoy renews his motion on the 9A amendment. Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I'm glad this thing come forward. Because if you go around in Gold Star mothers, or they're everywhere. We pass laws here for license plates. We got parks, we got fish, we got ducks, we got everything under the sun, license plates. But here we're going to have something that's going to show people they served our country.
Thank you, Senator. To the 9A amendment, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry, did you have something else?
Thank
you, Senator
Scoy. Move an oral amendment on page 36, line 7. After 41.65 semicolon, I'd like to insert Laws of Minnesota, Chapter 367, Subdivision 10, Part 2 and 3.
Senator Chaudhry, what are we repealing?
This is just an extension of the repealer of 8402. It's the same language that we have in 8402, except it's also in another section of law as well. And I'd like the committee to consider adding that to be repealed as well. It's the exact same language, except it's just found in another portion of law. And it's the same policy regarding the native ecotype prairie restoration that we've discussed with the 25-mile from the county border requirement and the various county ecotype requirements and the, you know, basically the rigid requirements of native prairie seed sourcing. And it's the exact same language that's found in 84.02. It's just also in this law of section of law that we also have. And so I'd like the committee to consider repealing that as well.
Mr. Knopf, to that amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, though, one issue there is the smallest piece of language that you can repeal is a subdivision. And you don't want to repeal the entire subdivision because there are other things in there. I think that this affects the LCCMR appropriation from last year.
Right.
And there are other pieces in there so what we'd have to do is show the language in here with the language that you're talking about stricken rather than as a repealer, because you can't repeal clauses or paragraphs.
That would be fine. I'll be happy to move that.
So we'll just be moving it in concept, Mr. Chairman.
Right. So it would not be deleting the entire subdivision.
To Senator Chaudhry's oral amendment, then, is there a clear understanding of what council will do? Senator Langseth, isn't
it? Well, Mr. Chair, here the other day when Leroy Stump had his bill that dealt with grass seed, why we amended it. And we've got a situation in Minnesota where most of our grass seed is grown up in the Roseau area, has been for, I don't know, 50 years or better. And this simply doesn't work. Somebody had been told that if you use seed from nearby, it grows better. And I guess in Senator Chaudhry's committee, testimony was that wasn't true at all. So we'd be repealing something that really isn't workable.
Any other comments?
You're for the amendment.
Otherwise, to
the amendment.
Otherwise, to the amendment that Senator Langseth apparently is for. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. We do have someone that would like. Okay. Any other amendments from the members? Now I would. I see we have a couple people that would like to. Senator Phoebe.
Mr. Chair and members, may I just ask a question about something? I don't have much longer to say that I'm still new. So with talking about the license plates, has this committee ever entertained the retired veterans' license plates to be able to make those available for retired veterans? Have you ever considered that?
Welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. There are veteran license plates, proud to be a veteran. There's really not a retired veteran. When you retire from the military, you're done with your military service, you become a veteran. So there is the proud to be a veteran license plate that is available
for
that.
We do have proud to be a veteran.
Yes.
I just got a call on this one thing, so thank you for that information. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do have a couple of people that would like to speak to the bill, and we're going to limit that to just a couple of minutes, please. But welcome to the Senator Vickerman.
Senator Hand,
did you have a question? Oh, I'm sorry. Was there someone that wanted to speak to the bill? Now's the time to come to the table. Let's start to my right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Victoria Reinhart. I'm on the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, where I chair the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And I will be very brief. I was a member of the Waste Pesticide Task Force, and that's the section that I'm speaking to. And along with Senator Vickerman and Representative Junkie. And to be very brief, there were two main issues that we were concerned about as counties. One of them was liability language, and I just talked to the Department of Ag, and they have agreed to basically adopt language that is similar to the Pollution Control Agency and Household Hazardous Waste. So the counties are comfortable with that, and they're going to do that, and therefore it doesn't need to be in legislation. But I just found that out about 30 seconds ago. The other issue was in the task force, one of the things that we all agreed to, even though there were many different machinations on how you could do this, was that ultimately this is the Department of Ag's responsibility. And although we are partners at the local level and we want to be very good partners in protecting the environment and providing good service, we wanted to make sure that the language in the bill really reflects that. And there are some spots where there is some question about that, where, for example, on 26.22 line where it talks about no disposal site shall turn away a waste pesticide because it is not agricultural or not residential. And there's also language in regarding reimbursement and basically having enough money. Well, if we go through the if we go through as a county taking in the waste, we want to make sure that we're going to get the reimbursement that we are expecting. And as far as the language regarding if it's we can't turn it away, again, that could be construed as a mandate on counties. And in some cases, the hazardous waste collection sites are not permitted to take business waste and therefore would not, under the permits issued by the state, be allowed to do it. And so the language we feel would need to be clarified. So the basic issue that remains is making it very clear that this is the Department of Ag's responsibility. We will be willing and good local partners, but we don't want this to end up being a mandate, an unfunded mandate on the counties. Thank you.
Ms. Garlitz, did you want to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Annalee Garlitz with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I do not have anything to add. She summarized everything nicely, all the concerns that we had.
Questions, comment, Mr. Knopf? Senator Dill, let's take you first.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Garlitz, I asked you weeks and months ago about mandate relief in the environmental area, and you were going to get back to me, and then you didn't get back to me, and then you were going to get back to me, and finally I asked you in the hall out here whether you were
able to find a single environmental mandate that you would support repealing? And I believe your answer was you hadn't found one yet because you hadn't met with your county officials and so forth. So do I understand this correctly? We're getting toward the last month and a half or so of session, and you still have not yet identified a single environmental mandate that we can provide relief for counties on. Is that correct?
Ms. Garlitz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, we do have a list, and I just wanted to clarify that we have not yet met with our AMC board or our legislative committee about that particular list. We've been working frantically on a lot of healthcare issues and a lot of other issues and the environmental issues we have not gotten to yet. We're still in discussions about those. This particular piece is new language, and so right now we're very satisfied with the language that was worked out with the task force after they met that did specify that, yes, this is a Department of Ag responsibility. They're actively working with counties, being good partners, and helping us with the collections. So we do have some ideas on some unfunded mandates for the environmental area, but I have not gotten the permission to go ahead with those from my board.
Follow up. Well, Mr. Chair and members, we're at the second committee deadline here, and we still have not gotten, at least I've asked and have not yet received a single response on my request for mandates that the county may want to get rid of in the environmental area. And there was a list of them that AMC put out, and I put that together in a bill with the help of Mr. Knopf and gave you a copy of it. But apparently nothing in that bill was something you were interested in, so you were going to add to it or meet or do something to come up with something. And here we're in the second committee deadline, and I haven't seen a thing yet.
Ms. Garlitz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, the list that you put together was a list that we got from this, or the bill that you had worked up was a list that we received from the state auditor's website. It was not a list that we had fully vetted through our board and legislative and our legislative committee, our board, or executive board. So we thought that we had made that clear in the redesign document that came out. So I apologize for anything that did come out and if people were confused, but we are working on this actively with our members. We just don't have approvals for this particular piece yet.
Senator Shadrick.
I'll just add, and I'm not well versed on this particular provision, but the Environment Committee has passed a couple of bills that really set a serious process for investigating our entire natural resource delivery services, including mandates. And so I think we're very, very much on a solid process. In fact, several of the items that the AMC has put out in terms of what they consider to be onerous mandates, I too requested, you know, what should we do on them? And it seemed a little early to be able to pass a producer-based recycling system. And that's going to take a lot of details, and it's going to affect our process, and it's something I'd like to pursue, and we're going to, but it's just something we just can't snap our fingers and do either. And that's my feeling on it. I think we are moving in the direction of reforming our natural resource delivery process, but we're going to do it in a very systematic, deliberative way.
Mr. Reinhart, did you want to respond to either of those comments?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator DeDale, Senator Chaudhry. The Association of Minnesota Counties has taken a strong position regarding environmental and product stewardship, and that is a change in the way things have been done and how things are funded. And we are taking a very comprehensive approach, as you have mentioned. And there are specific areas that we're pushing forward right now in the environmental field, paint product stewardship, some tweaks to the e-waste legislation, and there are a number of other examples as well. Regarding Senator Dill, your comment about wanting, and Senator Chaudhry, about wanting to get a list, I will take that. I have gotten the message loud and clear. I will take that to the next board of directors meeting. And when I leave here, I'll contact the president of the Association of Minnesota Counties and say we need to call a legislative committee as well.
Senator Scoy.
And so I will take that message back.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, members, I listened earlier today to Senator Dill's discussion with the department about ag pesticide and non-ag pesticide, and not exactly sure I understood that. And I'm looking on the bill at page 26, line 22 and 23, and now we have agriculture and residential definitions. So I'm not exactly sure what all we're doing here, but when I first looked through this, I kind of flagged this clause D about turning away. I think that we should listen a little bit to what the county said here, and maybe Mr. Bozicki wants to respond, but I think for the committee's discussion, I would move that we, on page 26, lines 22 and 23, we delete those two lines.
Is that a motion, Mr. Senator Squire?
Yes, it is.
We have a motion before us, members, on page 26, line 22 and 23, strike the new language. Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Reinhart, what was the language that you had worked out?
Ms. Reinhart?
I will defer that question to Anna Lee.
Okay.
Ms. Gerlitz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we've been working in the House with the Department of Ag and Representative Junkie on some language about this program. I'm not sure if that's the language that you're referring to or if you're referring to the language about liability. Okay, I'll try as well.
Reinhart.
I would have to get back to you on the exact language.
All right.
But the gist of it was, and it wasn't just in one spot either. There are several different spots throughout the language that references that the counties would be responsible if the Department of Ag didn't do something. This is one example of that where they're saying we can't turn it away. But it's very clear then that it falls to the counties. And so this is one example and one that was pretty easy to point out.
Okay. All right.
Members, to the amendment to strike the language, line 22 and 23. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Well,
Senator Dill.
As long as they're trying amendments on that page, I'm going to try one.
Senator Dill.
Senator Kubley's laughing in advance. Does that mean you're going to...
It's not what you say, Senator. It's the way you say it.
Does that mean I'm going to get a no vote? Well, let's try this. On page 26, line 26.3, delete the words, at least every other year, and insert the word periodically. And then the department can decide how often they've got money and time to pick it up.
Mr. Goodenough, do we have to do that somewhere else as well?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Senator Dill wanted to do that also on 26.8 for the residential collections, too.
Yes, right. Let's do the same thing there.
26.8.
Senator Vickerman, did you want to comment to that?
No, I was just, Mr. Chair, we were trying to follow in the page you were at.
I'll go back to it. Senator Chaudhry, did you have a?
Just to encourage members to oppose the amendment.
We have an amendment before us from Senator Dill on line 3 of page 26 to strike at least every other year, and insert periodically. And then we are also making that change on line 8 after the what you see in your bill is the stricken language. We would put in periodically as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
I'm just wondering on the 26.8 whether just striking that underlying language would do it since the word periodic appears in the sentence before the word disposal. In other words, if you just struck the underlying language, it'd say must provide periodic disposal opportunities in each county. I don't think you need to have periodically inserted in there.
I think we'll incorporate that suggestion, Senator Hand. Thank you. And I think the department would like to just briefly touch on this amendment.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Very, very briefly, and just for the committee's information purposes, prior to the changes that took place in 2008, the department had direction to do waste pesticide collections at least every other year. And basically what we did is we did the northern part of the state 1 year, the southern part the second. changes in 2008 had us doing waste pesticide collections in every county every year. So the thought here, I believe, was to go back to the every other year concept. So just for information purposes, we're comfortable in doing that. Periodic gives us more flexibility. But just for your information, that's a little bit of the genesis of that language.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Senator Dale.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Buzicki can keep on doing it every other year if that works for him and he's got the manpower and money to do it. But this gives him a little more flexibility in case something comes up that interferes with that ability.
Ms. Reinhart.
In the task force, one of the reasons that the recommendation came out every year was that they really wanted some consistency, and especially in greater Minnesota, it seemed that they wanted to be able to know that they were going to have a place to dispose of the waste. Every other year, making that change is fine. I think if you go to periodically, you're really diluting the effectiveness of the bill.
Other comments? We have the Dill amendment before us, striking at least every other year on line 3 and adding periodically, and then striking on line 8 every other year. To the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposing?
No.
Motion prevails. Other amendments? Others who would like to speak for or against the bill? Senator Vickerman, you get the last word.
Chair, before I move this, I want to thank the committee for all the hard work that you've done. I think we've got a good bill here. We didn't hurt the veterans. We didn't hurt military affairs. We pricked a little bit with the ethanol. I think we funded about everything we could and still stayed under our 7% target that we were supposed to stay under for our cuts. So it's a good bill. When we get to the Senate floor, I'd like some of the members to help me move it through, because then you're going into not strictly ag people, it's environmentalists and it's everything else when we get on the Senate floor. So this is your bill. It's not my bill. It's our bill, I should say. And so Mr. Chair, I would move.
With that, Senator Vickerman moves Senate File 1779 as amendment to be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance.
Yeah. Oh, we haven't adopted the delete all yet, have we?
No, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, might I suggest you've got several documents here. And you've also, I don't think anybody has moved Senator Moy's bill from earlier today.
I'll move it.
Senator Chaudhry moves Senate File
2047
as amended. And be we're going
added to the
omnibus.
Right, added to the Article 1
in 1779.
We'll just add it to the Article 1 right now.
And add it to Article 1 to that amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
And then, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knopf,
you'll need a motion basically to adopt Articles 1 and 2 as amended, 1, 2, and 3, and 4, actually Articles 1 through 4, as amended, as a delete everything amendment to be prepared by staff along with a spreadsheet to include the numbers. So, and if you could give the staff a little bit of leeway on making sure we get all the technical changes correct, especially with some of the amendments, would be helpful. And just for staff in the office, we can put this together in our office tomorrow. That would have, it'll basically be a delete everything amendment that has the contents of everything you've adopted today.
Senator Vickerman, will you move that? Senator Vickerman moves Articles 1, 2, 3, and 4 and gives staff some wiggle room.
As amended.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed. Motion prevails. Mr. Knopf, is that?
That's it.
Thank you, members. And
you got to move it past the bill.
No, you have to
move the bill. Sorry, yeah.
Now, Senator Vickerman moves Senate File 1779 as amended. Be recommended to pass and referred to Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed. Motion prevails.
We Mr. are Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Could you explain to me what wiggle room means?
That's defined in his office.
He's going to show you.
We are adjourned.
I suppose.